Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, your week in IndyCar listener Q&A show. Recording this at about 1:30 p.m. Pacific on a Tuesday afternoon. It is beautiful and blue skies outside. Cannot wait here. Going to be driving down to Monterey early Thursday morning. Be there Thursday through Saturday for the IMSA event. Need to duck out early Saturday afternoon, head home, do laundry, repack, and then blast off to Indianapolis Sunday morning and be there for pretty much the rest of the month. Was going to record the show last night, but was aware that we had some things coming today with IndyCar, that being Team Penske and Roger Penske's decision to suspend four members of his racing team. So let's do this. Say a big thank you to our guy, Jerry Siddeth, who puts together the questions. I sent him a note last night after he sent me the primary questions to get through and said, hey, I'm going to hold off. I think we might have a few more coming through. Can you keep an eye on that? And he did, was able to assemble a couple to lead off the show. Say a big thanks to our partners as well. Why don't we do that right now? Come back, give you a little bit of a inside baseball bit about the Team Penske suspension stuff, and then we'll jump right into your questions. Time to say a big thank you to our show partners on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, starting with FAF Technologies, build-to-print composites manufacturing company. They're specializing in medium to large-scale automotive, motorsports, and military applications. Visit FAFTechnologies.com. It's P-F-A-F-F Technologies.com to learn more about their services and how they can benefit your business. Next, it's the Justice Brothers, makers of premium additives, lubricants, and cleaners, and servicing the automotive and motorsports industries for more than 85 years, with victories in all the biggest North American motor races, including the Indianapolis 500, the 24 Hours of Daytona. The Justice Brothers products are truly race-proven. Learn about their vast history and range of offerings at justicebrothers.com. If you're fond of awesome motor racing collectibles, including FAF Motorsports McLaren gear and goodies, pay a visit to torontomotorsports.com. And finally, we have a new online merchandise home for the podcast, thepruittstore.com. All the show stickers, models, racing memorabilia I'm trying to sell and put towards our fund to buy a house is now live and rocking. thepruittstore.com. So lately, I've been trying to do the show in about 40 to 45 minutes. Tell you up front here, if you want to get out of the show at that time frame, hit that good old 1.5x speed. It's probably going to take us a little over an hour just because we got a lot of stuff to go through, especially in light of these suspensions. So put out the call for questions for the show yesterday, a little bit after 12 o'clock Pacific. I think around 2:30-ish, 2:40, got the first wind through my primary client at Racer that the suspensions were looming. Journalistic standards for publishing a story like that and saying that it is a fact, you're going to need at least two sources confirming as such, and didn't have that. Had the one, didn't necessarily doubt the accuracy of it. It named all four members who were indeed confirmed this morning to be suspended: Tim Cindric, Ron Rozewski, Luke Mason, and Robbie Atkinson. Texting yesterday with Tim Cindric about one other item, answered that, came back, asked him about this, asked if he could confirm yes or no if the suspension that I'd heard about was happening. He was very gracious via text to respond, say, not something I can go on the record about, have any comment on, can't, you know, I'm paraphrasing or giving the distillation, but basically nothing that I can offer you in response in the answer to your question. That doesn't mean it's a yes. It just means not able or willing to answer. And so huddled with my editor at Racer, looked at his response. I said, this doesn't look like anything we can use to confirm either it is happening or say no, it isn't happening. We have no second source on this. So this is not an actionable item. He agreed. So yesterday at about 4:49, I think it was, filed the story. Had a section in there for a quote to be on the lookout for that, knowing that I am on the West Coast. Team Penske is on the East Coast. Obviously, that three-hour time difference. So sent through the story. Sent a note to Jerry saying, hey, we're going to hold on. We're not going to record tonight. Something's coming. I just don't know exactly when. And indeed, that release went out at whatever time it was, 4 something in the morning, California. And also got an email right after that from, I do apologize because I don't remember his exact title, but Penske Entertainment VP of communications, or I think it's a lot higher than that, but Jonathan Gibson, one of the 3 or 4 senior most leaders at Penske Entertainment, sent me a direct email asking if I wanted to speak to Roger about this. It was a kind offer. I hadn't spoken to Roger in about 18 months, my choice. This certainly seemed like a offer to accept, which I did. And got a call from Roger, I don't know, maybe half hour later. I forget the exact time. It's been a bit of a blur. Funny little note here before we jump into the show. So I sent this through, as I mentioned. There were instructions given, hey, keep an eye out on a statement coming, whether it's in an inbox that lands or social, whatever it is. Keep an eye out. It's probably going to happen early. Cut and paste, use the statement, push that story live so we can be up right when it happens. I had to get up to go pee at about 5:15. And by chance, thought to look at my phone. And looked at my phone and had a whole bunch of texts from IndyCar team owners and managers and you name it, saying, asking all kinds of things. Hey, why wasn't Newgarden suspended? What about this? What about that? And I'm like, apparently this has gone live. And so I took a look and saw that we indeed had not caught that and pushed that live. So I forwarded the release and said, hi, could we please push this live? So I think we ended up, instead of being among the first to publish, probably among the last, but anyways, whatever, life goes on. But yeah, it's stupid, but thankfully I had to get up and nature was calling. Otherwise, might have been many hours late on this. But the call with Penske was very interesting, strictly business, strictly matter of fact. If you happen to read the Q&A, which we put up on Racer, which I felt that was the best format to present this, minus any opinions or other, just straight questions, straight answer, which is how the whole thing went. Hopefully you get a feel for his view on things. He got heated a couple of times, especially with the last question. I don't think he interpreted what I was saying correctly, where I was asking is these repeated infractions across IMSA, NASCAR, and IndyCar, is this a sign of systemic inspection oversight within the team? Meaning, are there things happening repeatedly within the organization where such things are being missed and allowed to lead to infractions? I think he interpreted that as me saying, is there systemic cheating something going on? Which wasn't what I asked, which is clear in the question. It's exactly as it was asked. But nonetheless, got really heated there. Phone call ended somewhat abruptly. Fair enough. Temperature certainly rose in some of the questions, but I did my absolute best to just remain as cool and calm as can be, ask straight questions, even though they were tough, and take back whichever answers we got. And if I didn't feel that they were being answered to the full extent I'd hoped, pushed back, I think, on one or maybe two, and got more words. So check out racer.com if you haven't seen that. Otherwise, let's do a little pew, 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 pew. Say big thanks to y'all for sending in all your questions as usual. And we will get rolling with the cycling investor. What's your opinion on the penalties and suspensions Roger Penske handed out to Cindric and company? Is it adequate or should some folks be let go? This, I feel, in my lifetime, remaining lifetime on the good old top side of the dirt, I can't imagine this will ever happen again within Team Penske, at least on the IndyCar side. We know NASCAR is not super electronic yet, but you know, IMSA as well. I don't feel like this is ever going to happen again. So if I did have that impression that, oh boy, we just have substandard people working for us, I'd lean towards, yeah, need to let some people go because bit of a clown show going on. I don't feel that's the case here. Do I believe every single thing about how Team Penske from whomever's comments have portrayed things to be 100% truthful, from drivers to presidents to you, to everybody who's spoken about this, at least in the conversations I've had with them? No, I don't. But do I think firing a Cindric is going to change anything? No. I believe I said or wrote or opined on the show here maybe right after the initial penalties were announced 3 days after the Long Beach race. Firing Tim Cindric does nothing but harm to the team. He's too good at what he does, too important to the overall organization. That is the last thing I would suggest, unless Roger Penske wants his team in a very overall sense to become less good. Ron Rzewski, number two there, the managing director, he's as sharp a guy as I've known. I have never had a reason to mistrust Ron or think that he was anything other than an upstanding guy. Indeed, because of his role, that's somebody, if you're going to do some suspending, he should take a hit to, which he did. Luke Mason, the race engineer, don't know him super well. Like the guy every time I've ever spoken with him, but I don't know him enough and haven't known him long enough to make any character statements. So that's not actually a backwards criticism. It's just saying, whereas I've known Ron for a long time and have a really strong feel for who he is, to therefore say, I don't think that this was something he was, you know, doing as a bad actor, similar with Cindric. I just don't know Luke enough to make any statement either way. I want to think the best of people, though. And as things have been characterized to me from the moment, the day within like 2 hours of the penalties being announced after Long Beach, I'd heard about Robbie. I don't know. It's one of those things where you're in the sport for a long time and you kind of know everybody, but you realize most of it's just kind of nods and hellos walking by. I'm sure I know Robbie, but I don't really know Robbie. I've heard that he was mortified about what happened, took responsibility for it. Truly an error, truly nothing that was meant to be evil and cheaty and that kind of stuff. Don't know him, so I can't make any comments, but if I appreciate the approach here to close on this topic, as Penske described things, they were looking at Luke Mason, the engineer, and Atkinson, the assistant engineer, who's on Will Power's car, as the ones really deserving the hammer. As Roger described it in our interview, Cindric and Rzewski didn't feel right and wouldn't feel right if their two subordinates got hammered and they didn't. Is, again, that's what Roger said. That's how he described it. So he presented things more as a voluntary item. However it took place, I think this is the right decision by Roger. I think chose the right people. Not sure why the driver, Newgarden, who used this three times illegally, wasn't sanctioned in some way by the team. Looking at the big picture, are they really going to suspend Newgarden, the defending winner of the Indy 500? I don't believe we live in that kind of magical world where that could happen or would happen. Should it? I don't know. That seems like a lot, but park them this weekend, maybe. Say, okay, no Indy GP. I mean, that would, in theory, do some pretty significant damage to his championship aspirations. there's one other factor here which can't be ignored. And I asked this of Roger. IndyCar disqualified the two car of Newgarden, the winning car at St. Pete, and the third place car of McLaughlin. We know, had confirmed McLaughlin used it once, didn't receive any benefit from it, admittedly, but regardless, did use it once. But both were disqualified by IndyCar. When it came time to levy internal suspensions at Team Penske, Roger, you've gone heavy on the number two car with the race engineer and the race strategist, who's also the boss of the overall number two car. Why wouldn't you include the driver? He explained that. Okay. But there were no suspensions for anyone related to the three car. And that's just the part that, again, take it on what he said. They, from their internal investigation, found that Scott McLaughlin and his race engineer, Ben Bretzman, didn't know about this. They did obviously hit it once and it worked once and whatever, but found that they knew nothing about it. And therefore, there was no similar thing levied towards that side of the camp. That's a judgment call they made. I still think could have done a little bit more. I don't know how many people really feel that, at least among the drivers who were disqualified, that Newgarden was truly a babe in the woods who was just confused about the rules. That's what he said, contradicting what Tim Sindrick said in a long interview with me. But regardless, it's the only other thing I thought might have happened. Just do the Indy GP. In theory, I think a fair amount of folks would say, okay, nothing more needs to be done, but this is the path they've chosen, and I'm good with it. JJ Gertler, you say, is there any particular definition for, quote, suspension? In NASCAR, we see that even all suspended, crew chiefs not at the track, they are in live communication with the team from the team headquarters. One assumes the relevant Penske personnel will not be present for the two races, but do we know what that means for their involvement with the team? Didn't get into that with Roger. Was explained to me before the call that this is truly you are not there taking part in the event, being involved. This to me would be more of a Team Penske thing than an IndyCar thing. IndyCar didn't levy these suspensions. So in the absence of Sindrick and his number two, I guess I would need to ask Kyle Moyer, who I think is the next senior most person on the IndyCar management org chart within the team, on exactly how this will be assessed. My understanding of it is we won't see them. They won't be involved. I hope that's the case. If we were to learn that indeed they're back at mission control at Team Penske or wherever else and on headsets and coaching, advising, whatever it is throughout practice, qualifying in the race, Indy 500 is mainly what I'm thinking. That to me would be I just want this frickin' thing to be resolved properly and go away, not to become like a social virus that keeps flaring up. Sorry for that mental imagery there. Ed Joris, you say, how much are the absences really going to hurt the 2 car, the 3 car, and the 12 and the Indy 500? I don't think there are any absences on the 3, so we should be okay there. On the 2, I asked Roger this. I called in the Penske IndyCar PR rep and his boss, the overall boss of comms at Team Penske, to ask who is replacing Sindrick and who is replacing Mason. Neither of them answered or responded. I asked Roger in our interview. He said they hadn't gotten to that point yet. Knowing that cars are on track in, like, what, 72 hours or less or something like that, I'd have to imagine this will be mapped out here pretty soon, and I hope to have an answer. Atkinson not being involved on the 12 car for willpower won't change a thing. It's the 2 car where, if they can, who knows? bring someone back that Joseph has worked with a decent amount and has a good rapport with, and they should have some pretty decent strategists who can help. I don't think it'll be too much of a hiccup. So just need the answers to those things, Ed, before I can give you a really sharp, ooh, boy, that's going to suck, or, eh, they'll be fine. The one other thing, and I had this as my last question for Roger, but didn't get to, just because after asking about the multiple instances of cheating over the last 10 to 11 months, that was a conversation stopper when he was done speaking. Mentioned this before in the show. I'll just chuck it in very quickly. Wasn't able to ask this of him. I'll see if I can ask someone else there, because it is completely pertinent to the question. Chip Ganassi Racing, couple of pole positions, really impressive at the Indy 500. Pillow and Erickson and Dixon have been monsters there for the last couple of years. We know that Dixon's former race engineer, Michael Cannon, left, went to the AJ Foyt Racing team. Michael is a wizard in terms of engineering around Indianapolis. We saw that last year in what he was able to instill within the Foyt team, how strongly they ran, particularly with Santino Ferrucci. Dixon, in an interview, and I think it was at Long Beach, after his win at Long Beach, maybe? I have this sitting in a separate Word document with his quotes in it to pick up here when we get closer to rolling at the Speedway, but mentioned, and I'm just paraphrasing, that with a number of the engineers and whomever who've left Ganassi in recent years, a lot of other teams kind of know how they go about the Indy 500, and I don't know if he said speed secrets, but what he was referring to was our playbook. I think he did might actually have said playbook, but basically with some of the departures we've had, our playbook for what makes us special around Indy has been handed off to some other teams. Penske is known to be one of those teams in this informational technical relationship back and forth with the Foyt team. So in the, hey, they've offered Roger to speak and you don't really have a relationship, so there's nothing to burn or destroy, so just ask everything. That was going to be the last question, because I'd love to hear if that was acknowledged or admitted to. We didn't get there. But that's an important thing to keep in mind, Ed, and that's different from what Team Penske would have had coming into the Indy 500 last year. So this technical alliance with Foyt happened middle of last summer after the 500. As I've been told by many, and as Dixon said publicly, aware that what makes them special in their Indy 500 chassis playbook is now something in the hands of others. This is the one team, Team Penske, where even if the situation with the two car and the defending race winner is not exactly perfect, they should be faster than ever. To clarify, engineer or even a driver leaving a team and going to another one and bringing some institutional knowledge, setups, whatever it might be, to improve the next team. It's been going on since the second IndyCar race to ever happen. So this is nothing new. It's nothing specific to Team Penske, anyone else. But if the team that's been the best at Indy the last couple years and how they have been the best, that knowledge has been imparted elsewhere within the paddock, you would only expect those teams who've received it to be a little bit stronger. If they aren't, that will be the shock. Jamie Dolinger is marshal after the points adjustment for the disqualification of both the two car and the three car at St. Pete. I was surprised that IndyCar elected not to award Christian Lindgaard the 2 points for leading the most laps. They scored his 7 laps as official while making Newgarden's unofficial. Has IndyCar given a reason why? Okay, this is a really quick answer, an easy one, Jamie. They haven't, because it never occurred to me to ask, and I didn't know about it until you mentioned this. So I guess the other way to say it is, if I was better at my job, I would have every facet covered, but clearly I don't. It's also not news to anybody. When I see folks from IndyCar early next week at the Speedway, I will do my best, brother, to remember to ask. But sometimes as I remember, I forget to remember. Chris Ludwig, say Hinch and Rossi have hinted on their podcast that their thoughts on Chip Ganassi Racing's fuel mileage, it is not just a, quote, Dixon being Dixon deal. And said that a couple times over the last few weeks. I think it was last year where Alex Palou went head-scratchingly long on a stint at Mid-Ohio. Is there any other paddock scuttlebutt on the subject? Not that I've heard. I have heard there's been some questioning as to whether this is happening. You would have to assume legally, right? If someone's saying it couldn't just be the driver being that much better, there must be something else. You would assume that something else isn't meant like, oh, divine intervention. The Lord giveth him 2 extra gallons of fuel. I will genuinely start asking some questions to try and gain a better understanding of this. Hinch is about as sharp a person as I know. Respect the guy completely. Rossi, super sharp as well. Having seen Scott Dixon do this for 15 plus years, I have not looked at this as something that is impossible. So if smart folks are thinking that this is actually impossible and there's something else going on, I mean, I'd love to hear some actual insights on that, right? Not just that it can't be Dixon doing Dixon things, but like we hear that this is happening or they're doing this or something. Yeah, that would be the thing I'd love to learn more about either from them or I'll add this to my list of things to ask folks about. Jordan Darwin, MP, any chance of a Able Motorsports HMD entry? Not that I've heard. I do need to catch up with Mike Marini and Henry Malukas shortly on the HMD side. I know that when I spoke with Bill Able, I think last Friday, did the story about them not competing in the Indy 500. I mean, Bill has hopes. I think he's also realizing with how things are shaking out in a way that he didn't know when he put in his order for a Dallard DW12, that Prema was on the horizon and coming in and going to get 2 Chevy engine leases, effectively closing out any chance of more being offered. I don't think Bill knew that was a thing that could happen, but it has. And so now Bill has a brand new DW12 that'll be finished here sometime soon, which could be used, obviously, in motor races. He was aligned with Chevy last year. Chevy was going to provide an Indy 500 engine only for him this year. But knowing that, looking to 2025, unless something surprising happens and a Chevy team downsizes or switches to Honda or something like that, there's no understanding as to how a motor would be acquired to do more than the 2025 Indy 500. No, there was an ambition to do more, right? Partial season, full season, something. I'm not speaking for Bill, just sharing my own thoughts here. Do I think he'll hold on to the DW12 and at minimum try and do the Indy 500 next year with his son Jacob? Go do adequate testing so he not only gets his license but is really up to speed. Jacob had just won his first race at Barber, which is awesome. NXT race. Very possible. But I would say there's also a distinct possibility that with the door seemingly closed on using that new car more than once a year, I wonder if Able Motorsports would look to another racing series and maybe buying another or a different kind of car where they could go race anytime they want. Akos Callum, underscore Callum. MP, hope you and the wife are doing well. We are, thank you. Who do you see being serious contenders for the McLaren seat, and do you see them continuing next year? Okay, so there's 2 seats available for Arrow McLaren next year. Alexander Rossi, free agent. could sign him, hold on to him. Zach Brown has mentioned in the media, I think in and around Long Beach, maybe just before, I'm not totally sure, but that decision's coming up soon. The other seat is the one that for sure, with Davey Malukas now out of the frame, will need a driver. The fact that they tested good old Teddy Porkchops, Teo Porcher, on Monday at Gateway, getting his first ever oval experience, got his license or approval to do IndyCar oval races by successfully completing that test. But I am aware he did 110 laps. It was a little bit of interruption with rain. I am very confident IndyCar would want him to do more oval testing before. That's one thing to say, okay, you've cleared the technical hurdle of getting approval, but actual being able to go out and race and go wheel to wheel, we're probably going to want to see a lot more. And I love that approach of saying, hey, cool, we want you to be here, but you're not going to go race after the Indy 500 at pick the oval event with 110 laps of total oval experience in an Indy car. We're going to want you to do more. So I would say Errol McLaren's testing of Teddy on oval, on an oval, and I'm sure he'll be doing more. Take that as a clear indication they want the lad to be in that number six car, or possibly Rossi's number seven car next year. We'll see again what they choose to do with Rossi. Callum Ilott, who, barring something strange, rumors that Tony Kanaan could be put in the six car for the Indy 500, but have heard for a while now that they've been planning on Callum Ilott to do that. I think Callum as well is someone they are very interested in and looking at very seriously for next year. So I would say it's those three that stand out as the top choices for those two seats. If they were to part ways with Rossi, which could be wrong, but I feel like he's going to have a really good Indy GP and a really good Indy 500. And I mean, the team loves him. Chevy loves him. All kinds of love there. Provided his results reinforce the fact that, no, you need to hold on to this guy, I do think it's going to be that kind of one-horse, one-car race. And the fact that Errol McLaren saying, hey, Teddy Porkchops, let's turn you into an oval driver, it leads us in a direction to believe that's where they're thinking or leaning going forward. Don't mind me while I move some things so our cat Rocky can go look out the window while people are outside banging on the walls and doing some painting. Silvio Constantine Vladucha? I hope I didn't murder your last name. I so apologize if I did. Is the McLaren-Juncos alliance still a thing? Maybe I missed it, but Juncos had no McLaren sponsors on their cars. So the clarification that I got from the Errol McLaren team was they have reserved the right to use space on the rear wheel ramps of the Juncos Hollinger Racing Chevys. That's not a huge amount of space, but there is space there for them to place some of the smaller sponsors if necessary. I looked at St. Pete, didn't see them. I don't know if I saw anything the last race or two after that, but I feel like that could be a thing here during Indy, where maybe the plan that McLaren had, which is, look, if we have an oversubscription of sponsors and we need to give them some, you know, additional space or whatever it might be, we'd like to rent that space on your car. I'm guessing we might start to see that here, knowing that we're coming into the biggest month of IndyCar of the year. Ye Cats 45. Will David Malukas be back? And if so, who would be the best fit for him? Trying to get over being upset that he was let go because of injury. If we're talking immediately, Dale Coyne in that number 51 entry, which doesn't have anybody signed to it, to my knowledge, after the Indy 500, somewhere in there would be great for Davey to get back. get some more mileage, build up his strength. If we're looking to the future, truly a 2025 type thing, where might he go? What might he do? I don't pretend to know all of the contractual stuff at Meyer Shank Racing, for example, with Tom Blomqvist. If Tom's year works out super well, which I obviously hope it does, he's a great guy and a super talent, there'd be nothing there. But if by chance that doesn't work out the way that they want, I did write very recently that, although it's not confirmed, we have a pretty good account that Meyer Shank Racing's heading back to IMSA to represent Acura in the GTP class. That would be a wonderful and delightful place for Tom Blomqvist to go back and be the badass and leader there. Where else? We don't know if Rahal Edelman-Lanigan is going to be able to hold on to Christian Lundgaard. If not, I'd think Davy Malukas would be the heck of somebody to consider. Would also say Ed Carpenter Racing, knowing that Rinus VK is a free agent. If he were to leave, Davy seems like someone who'd be a great fit there as well. So there's a couple of places. I don't know if I see an Andretti or Ganassi or similar opportunity opening up, but somewhere in the vicinity of an RLL, MSR, or ECR, and who knows, even Juncos, right? If Augustine doesn't stay for a third season next year, I mean, Malukas seems like somebody who'd be really smart for them to onboard. He is very fast, super talented on ovals, and I think could be a boost for the organization. All right. Where else can we go? What else should we do? What else should we cover? Let's go to Go Faster Hank. Says, does Tony Kanaan need to take Pato to Planet Dagobah and train him in how to string together a championship run? Seriously, though, when will the consistency start to match the crazy speed that makes Pato so fun to watch? That's what he did last year, right? He was crazy consistent, which is what allowed him to have such a really strong championship finish. The only thing lacking were wins. So he lived on or around the podium last year, which is perfect. Difference, though, was Alex Palou did that, plus added a heck of a bunch of wins, which pushed him way over the top. McLaughlin, similar story. Scott Dixon, similar story. Arrow McLaren team's been a little bit off this year. I know they won, obviously, now at St. Pete. Pato was super quick there. Just not as quick as the Penske cars. Again, was that push to pass inflating their advantage? Probably, but thermal, good but not great. Long Beach, surprisingly out of the ballpark. And Barber, right? A lot of missing the setup window in qualifying. And then Pato, who doesn't do this very often. Don't ask Scott Dixon about Long Beach 2023. Pato's a bit of a bowling ball. And yeah, it is time. It is an absolute need for Pato with the, again, he's got to win. He's not doing too bad in the points. Get all that. But the, okay, we need you to be consistent podium guy, but to start getting a couple of wins, it's that who we're watching for. I'm watching for. We know he's among the best gunslingers we've seen in forever. He is just so much fun to watch. Unafraid of anything at any point in time about anybody. But hey, finished third, fourth, fifth, whatever in the championship. He's still young, right? He's still very young. To your point, this is the year where we really do need to see that that thing exists, where he can be championship Pato. Hasn't exactly panned out as expected so far, but I wouldn't use a very bad Barber as the argument to say, okay, this whole world is collapsing inwards on him. Don't believe that at all. Spencer Hinson says, MP, hope you enjoyed your weekend in Alabama. I did. Says Colton has had a nice, consistent start to the year. Do you think him and Andretti can be serious title contenders the rest of the way? And has anything major changed on his 26 car to spark this consistency? Andretti Global COO Rob Edwards provided us with some insights after Long Beach, where he finished second, saying Colton has put in a ton of work during the off season, really and truly become a student, really, for the first time, poring over data, over video, every possible area, trying to maximize himself in every way possible. Where we've known the Newgardens and Dixons and similar have been doing exactly those things. Rob didn't say it in these terms. It's how I interpreted it, and could be a wrong interpretation, but as he was giving these insights, it struck me like we see sometimes in the NBA where a crazy talented kid comes out of college after a year or two or even three, relies heavily on their natural talent to play, and they're super gifted, and they use that, and they do these amazing dunks and shots and all just right, absolute highlight reel stuff, which is what Colton did the first couple years. Invariably, though, there comes a point where after a couple years, there's that next step of development that's needed. And that's usually when those kids who didn't put in all the hours at the gym, didn't do all the same amount of hours of film study as the supreme best players in the league, realize, oh, that's the gap here, and that's the gap there, and they're all a bunch of little gaps, but I got to bridge them if I want to level up. As Rob described it, that's exactly what this sounded like. Colton had gotten by for a long time with being insanely talented, but we're talking about the work ethic, the education part, the becoming a true student of the sport, everything about it, finding every area to improve, which, again, a willpower does that, and this does that, and that does that. That's what I understand is really the big main challenge, as someone's outside our window here moving around a tall, crazy 30-foot-tall ladder. I hope the person doesn't fall. Sorry if you can hear all the banging around out there, but as Juan Montoya likes to say, it is what it is. So that's what I know about all that, Spence. Do I think they can be title contenders for the rest of the way? I don't know. If I thought so, I'd say yes. This, what we're about to do here at Indy, this month, I think, is going to be pivotal for them in that ability. It's been a while since Andretti cars were, holy cow, way up at the front in the race, in qualifying, I think, as well. They're going to need to be a factor. The Indy GP, Colton's won there, so they can certainly do that. Kirkwood can do it. Erickson can do it. Indy 500, I think Erickson's bringing some great extra stuff that's going to make them even better. I think, to answer your question, let's talk in early June, maybe even after we get through Detroit. They were very good at Long Beach. Hopefully they could be really good at Detroit and build up a couple of really strong races to kind of fortify their approach. I haven't seen anything yet to make me say, oh, Team Penske, Ganassi, watch out. You're about to get knocked off your perch. But yeah, well, give us a little bit more time and we're going to have a proper answer. Wayne Hill. So should IndyCar hire Adrian Newey to supervise the design of the next IndyCar? It would make an excellent semi-retirement task for him. Well, I love the question, Wayne. There are a number of folks who've asked this. I think Vincent Anderson as well. And it's one of those questions of like, hey, should you marry a supermodel? Of course you should. Doesn't the supermodel kind of have to want to get married for that to happen? Like, I love the idea. I would be shocked if that is what Adrian Newey chose to do as a follow-up to designing countless world championship-winning Formula One cars. We'd love it, but that would be among the most random ways for him to wind down his career. We'd be so fortunate to have it, but I also think some of us might be letting our hope for such a thing to happen maybe cloud the fact that, barring something crazy, I can't think of any way Adrian would say, oh yeah, I'm going from Red Bull to pen a future IndyCar. Maybe our dreams will come true, though. Ryan Caminiti says, hear me out. Le Mans style starts, but add a tables, ladders, and chair WWE variable to it. What driver puts another driver through a table to fire off the line first? It'd be Connor Daly. I mean, it's going to be Connor Daly. Even, and I know he's only doing the Indy 500 right now, but I feel like he'd still just run out onto the grid from wherever he is and do that. And it's one of the many reasons that I love him. Austin Taylor says, you told me to ask when we got closer to the Indy 500, some of the race shop tours or other racing related things to do around Indy during the days leading up to the 500. If I was a smarter monkey, Austin, I would have spent time assembling information for you on this. I am going to make a note here to reach out to you directly and try and help with this, because my brain, again, this is an excuse, but it's only Tuesday afternoon. My brain's already like, let me up. I've had enough. I'm brain farting here. But let me try and come up with a proper answer for you. All right, we're going to head into, to be honest, we wrapped the main items Jerry set out for us. So let's do this. Got three more below it, and he does all the do them now and shut the show down in red. And then he has, if you want to, here's a couple more in blue. So we're going to do that in blue, and then they then say farewell. And who knows, we might actually get done around when I wanted to. Our pal, Zach Dean, got to see it thermal, and I saw you at Long Beach as well, Zach. I think so. Him smart. Says, MP, saw Prema's looking at the IndyCar charter system. How will the charter teams be determined? I can imagine a bidding war could be good for the sport because that would add some serious initial value. What other benefits do you think a large field could bring? So how will the charter teams be determined? Wrote about that in depth, I think, maybe 2,000 to 2,500 words worth, Zach. When was that? At Thermal, I think. Maybe the Saturday, Sunday, Monday, something like that, after Thermal. So whatever that date range was, go back and look for that on Racer. You will get just about everything you need to know about the charters there. Love that we're getting Prema in, because they're a super good and prestigious team out of Europe. I don't love expanding to 29 full-time cars next year, just because I think it's just going to be a burden on the series to actively manage that many cars. And also under the charter construct where they're looking at limiting the field to 27 cars at a lot of events, if not most, outside the Indy 500, means that two cars are going to be going home for sure. Again, assuming our full season entry list is at 29. Hey, we have a lot of interest from teams and big growth, and there's a big, amazing junior open wheel team coming over that's launched so many drivers to Formula One stardom. Great. And it's very possible they could fail to qualify a bunch in their rookie season, where they're having to learn a lot of stuff and are new to ovals and so on and so forth. Like, I just don't know if that message, Zach, is the right one. So love that we have tons of people seemingly wanting to stay in the series, and a couple wanting to get into the series. Already mentioned the Able Motorsports issue of, well, you bought a car with the desire of being full-time, but now can't. Haven't even spoken about Pratt Miller Motorsports, which wants to be in, but Honda's already said, we got no more to give next year. Chevy's house is full up, so yeah. I don't know what the answer is, like the best way to address this. I've floated the idea of having like a A main and B main approach, where whomever wants to come and try and qualify at St. Pete, Long Beach, Mid-Ohio, whatever, come on out. We may not be giving you preferred paddock space for some of the non-full-time teams, or who knows, but we'll let you come in and go through practice and qualifying, and if you don't make it into the big race, well, 2 hours later or whatever on Saturday, we're going to have a late afternoon or early evening 1 hour jamboree on Peacock where the 3, 2, 5, however many of you go race like mad. And again, because I'm a bit of an anarchist, let's throw in some NXT cars. Let's make this an NXT race led by Indy cars. I don't know. Let's get more cars on the track. Have some fun. I don't know what the answer is, but it's a quote, great problem to have. But when you see folks packing their cars up and equipment up and taking the awnings down Saturday evening, I don't know if that's what IndyCar needs. So a bigger subject where I hate that I don't have all the answers to it, Zach, but I simply do not have all the answers. Lord Thyke says, I know the Dallara DW12 is many years old, but I recall around 2018 or so IndyCar made the aero kits that changed the look and feel of the cars. Why do we not look at that as a, quote, new car? And it says, thanks again for taking time to answer all our questions. Well, you're most welcome. I think I answered this exact question in the Racer mailbag that's due out tomorrow, and it went something like this. If you wore one style of clothes for many years, and that's how folks knew you, and then you decided to make a somewhat major change in the style of clothes you wore, you would look super different to folks. But would we, instead of calling you Steve, would we now call you Fred? Because you've radically changed your external appearance. Still the same person, right? You aren't a brand new person. Same thing applies here. They've changed many things about this car. There are still cars from the original 2012 season competing. This is like going and getting massive top to bottom plastic surgery. And you might have a new face and a new this and a new that. And you can go get a new identity. Does it change who you are beneath all of that cosmetic work? Absolutely not. So that's why I don't call it a new car, because it isn't. I know that IndyCar often likes to say it is and present it as something new. That's not being done because anybody believes it's a brand new car. It's being done because they realize they have an extremely old car that they get clowned about, and it's a lot easier to say, hey, this thing is, there's almost nothing carried over from the original car, so, and look at everything that's new, so therefore, it's the IR18, it's not the DW12. It's like, hey man, you tell yourself whatever you want, my eyes know what I'm looking at, and it ain't a new car. Left front changer, let's close on this. with the Thermal Club Donald J. Trump visit scrapped last minute and the kerfuffle last weekend with McLaren and Miami and F1 and the FIA hosting Mr. Trump at the Miami Grand Prix, what are the chances he makes an appearance at IMS this May? I have no clue. Again, I'm guessing, I'm not sure who I'd ask. I know that based on what they've told us, that they're told me that they won't allow any political branding on the cars. Fans are allowed to fly whatever political branding that they are, flags and such they want. Fans have and do. They did at St. Pete this year. I know at Mid Ohio, and I'm sure plenty of places. The ones that I've seen have all been in support of Mr. Trump. And again, I could be wrong. I don't know if I've seen any or any that come to mind, at least. Maybe they've been there and I just missed them. Regarding Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Biden. But is there anything stopping him, any of them, from coming to Indianapolis? I don't think so. I believe former vice president, Mr. Trump's vice president, Mike Pence, a routine visitor at the Indy 500, did that while he was the vice president. And then I believe afterwards as a quote private citizen as well, beforehand as well. So I don't think there's, who would try and stop a presidential candidate from attending the Indy 500? I'm just saying. I mean, whomever it is, that seems like something that I would struggle with, how anyone would actually do that. And then the potential PR disaster of banning or barring anybody, again, running for office, whether it's president or local farm council or otherwise. So I can't tell you what the odds are because I know nothing about this. But if this is something that, to your specific question, Mr. Trump wanted to do, I can't imagine anyone at the series, or if this were McLaren again, offering to host him, would turn that down. So, all right. We got the show done, y'all, and a little bit faster than I thought. Why don't I throw this in? Because let's just close on something a little just back in the regular patch of interest. Michael Bragg, you said, do you think Dave Malukas will be at the Speedway as an advisor role for any teams, or maybe just to help his face be seen around the paddock? I can say yes to him in the face. I don't know about advising any other teams, just because we haven't discussed it, but he told me in our interview last week, planning to be at Indy, planning to be at basically all the races, and said, hey, if you want to do anything, let me know. I'm like, absolutely. I want you to be my end-of-day video wrap-up guest more than once, because he's awesome. So Davey will be there. I'll make sure you see him on at least one of our racer end-of-day videos. And, yeah, can't wait for him to be healthy and ready to drive again, because love the kid. Huge, huge addition to IndyCar, and we need him back. All right, y'all, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is our little Marshall Pruitt podcast, brought to you by the absolutely fine and amazing folks at FAF Technologies, torontomotorsports.com, who just sent me a box of my favorite gift ever for members of the Pru Day listener group. If you want to join the Pru Day, check out the description for the show here. I think it's on Podbean. Oh boy, I cannot wait to hand these out. I love them so much. Y'all don't even know that you got something coming there, Prude. And Toronto Motorsports sent me so many of them that I'm probably just going to have to be handing them out to everybody for the rest of the year to make sure. They've made so many. But I cannot wait. This is everything I wanted. Just had a silly idea. Actually was inspired by my friend Matt Archuleta. I can't wait to get to Indy and start handing these out, and to hand them to the one driver who is probably going to giggle a little bit when he sees them. But anyways, big thanks to TorontoMotorsports.com, and then the Justice Brothers, just like family for so many years. I'll speak to y'all soon.